Hey, folks, welcome to the show. Hello, Mr. Sharad Tupran. How's it going? I realize I always ask the... I always say, how's it going? Straight when the show starts. And then I, you know, throw the ball in your court to be creative.
It's going very well. Can't complain. Things are good. We have an exciting company here. We've done so many fintechs. Today, something different. It'll be health tech. But yeah, I mean, more of the same. But... looking forward to today's chat as well. And our Friday chatting is a nice segue into the weekend, but things slow down into second half. And then this is one of the earlier ones, but still. So I like this Friday session that we have.
Or so it would seem that things slow down. But we like to keep those optics. And with that, would like to welcome Anuj Parekh from Healthy Sure on the show. Hey, Anuj, how's it going?
Hey, hi, Nikhil. Hey, Sharad. It's going well for me as well, but yeah, towards the fag end of the week, so we're all the verge of, you could say, closing on the business affairs, but looking at more on what new things we have to do over the weekend. So weekends are more for us to brainstorm on new ideas and initiatives, and for founders to reflect back on how's the journey coming along and how's the Josh.
So basically, don't take a break. That's what you're saying.
As a business operator, like, there are no weekends for us. We work 24/7. We are founders, so this is a tempered version of exactly the same narrative, but no official.
Yep. All excited to be on the show, and looking forward to this chat.
Oh, yeah, the pleasure is all ours, Anuj. You are ex-IIM Bangalore. You are a CA. You were at Narsimonji. You did your BCom there. You also had a 9-month stint at Ernst & Young, where I had an 8-month stint. I don't know whether for the same reasons.
Why a month?
But welcome. And Anuj, I think we naturally would love to hear a bit about Healthy Sure. We could get a sense that you're obviously working in the domain of group insurance and employee benefits. I think for the we've had a fair number of insurtech and fintech companies on our production here, but often it's difficult to for our listeners to basically get a sense of which bucket you guys sit in. So from that standpoint, obviously when it comes to insurance in your particular paradigm, there are obviously employees, there are employers, there are insurance products. There are guys who underwrite those products, and there are brokers or intermediaries. With that scene being set, where do you guys fit in?
Sure. Happy to pick this one right straight at the beginning of the conversation. We keep getting asked as to who we are and what is it in the value chain that we do. So we do something very, very unique. We are an aggregator of insurance and healthcare for organizations where we digitize the experience of buying and availing insurance for teams as small as 2 employees to as large as 10,000. But think of us more as a highway infra, where what we are doing is democratizing group insurance now for the wider community of brokers, agents, banks, B2B fintechs, and even offline business partners like HR consultants, staffing companies, financial advisors, CA advisors, where they could use our platform and distribute group insurance to their network of organizations or SME network that they have. And this way, we have a bigger universe of clients who could be addressed through our platform, and it's entirely white labeled for them. So in the classic sense of the, new gen companies, we would position ourselves as employee benefits as a service rather than just offering employee benefits, because now our customer and user base is the channel intermediaries and not just the end consumer of organizations.
I like the use of the phrase highway infra, because the hot word in VC community these days is I'm building rails. So we've every B2B SaaS company, like, we're infra rails, we're building rails. Understood. Nikhil's the guy who covered fake insurance. Mm-hmm. I did not. So I'm going to ask you a very basic question. Are you guys actually underwriting any of these products or no?
No. So we are, an aggregator. So okay. We don't manufacture these services. We get them on board and we help the community to distribute those products.
And when you say community, you mean essentially brokers and distributors?
Yeah. So brokers, agents, banks, B2B fintechs, and offline partners.
And this model is entirely B2B, right?
So extending it further, it's B2B2B.
Yeah. So, I'm going to ask another elementary question, right? There's a lot of focus in the recent time on sort of the insurance space and digitizing it, which now sort of people call it as insurtech, right? And the focus on the digitization aspect has been primarily, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the traction has been on the distribution side. And which is something that you guys are also doing. But is there any sort of work done from a tech standpoint on the actual risk assessment or sort of helping? And how does that fit into your white label solution, I guess?
Yeah. So I would say that each leg of the value chain is disrupting the space in their very own way. I would say there are companies who are specifically looking at claim settlement for credit-linked life insurance as to how can they automate the journey of claim settlements for any, you would say, lending tech company which undergoes a scenario of their borrower meeting with an unfortunate event of death. How do they automate the entire journey and make it all instantaneous? So as specific a use case as that, to somebody looking to use blockchain for claim settlements of motor insurance, to someone who's looking at AI ML tools for better risk assessment of, you could say, unknown, you could say, risk profiles, where, say, for example, a delivery commerce company or, say, an e-commerce company which is looking to protect its sellers with a minimum guarantee, but, say, what in the scenario if that minimum guarantee is not achieved for force majeure reasons? How can that risk get protected? So a lot of innovations that are happening on the manufacturer side in terms of underwriting, in terms of claims, in terms of new product innovations, where a person could get a discount on his health insurance premium basis, his health score, his health conditions, to having a pay-per-use model on a motor insurance, where depending on the number of kilometers you drive and your score as a driver, you get a discount onto their motor insurance premium. So it is more behavioral and analytical based assessment that the new gen companies are helping insurers to arrive at more, you could say, profiled way of underwriting as compared to what it has been traditionally. So yes, there have been innovations there as well on the manufacturing side. And we are on the other side where we are looking at making insurance and healthcare simple, affordable, accessible, and convenient to a universe of 100 million plus SMEs in the country. So our innovations lies on the distribution side.
So, I mean, is how was distribution traditionally happening when it comes to group insurance? Like before guys like you came into the picture? I mean, I understand from a product standpoint, you know, how you guys have changed or are changing things, right? In terms of, you know, from an employee or an employer standpoint, right? I mean, be it aggregation, be it dashboarding, be it, you know, making it very easy to track and monitor. That part, I think, one can figure out. But from a distributor standpoint, what was the pain point that you saw?
So the pain point that we've seen is that if you divide the historical timeline as pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, possibly that paradigm shift for most of the tech-enabled players. So what we've seen is that prior to the COVID pandemic, it was only the large and mid-sized organizations who would actually buy insurance for their teams.
Right.
And would be the largest set of broking community who would address this market with all manual touch points, right? From physical policy copy issuance to physical claim filing to manual email communication between the insurer and the HR and the employee and the entire process of generating quotes or proposals based on the custom requirements of a company, that all process would take weeks together. Now, imagine now that post the pandemic, when everyone was off from work or maybe were remotely set up, and employers wanted to invite their employees to be back to work be assured that they are in a safe environment, and if anything goes wrong, they are taking care of their health exigencies. So enter an SME health insurance product where it is excessively easy for any SME to build a plan based on their budget,
right.
Where they could not, they needn't wait for weeks, but they could just wait for a couple of hours to get proposals from 20 plus insurers, depending on their choice, to having a seamless access to a platform where the entire communication on, say, policy benefits, education, what's covered, what's not covered, in simple bhasha, is explained to their end consumer employees, to having a dashboard where these employers could add, delete employees on the go without having to rely on email communication, to making sure that the entire claims process is made paperless with real-time claims tracking. So this is where that innovation has happened post-pandemic with a few insurtechs like us who have entered this market in order to automate the entire journey right from the point of plan selection to post-sales on member onboarding, policy orientation, member management and claims.
Mm.
Where with this automated approach, we are able to scale exponentially on the SME side, which so far has been unaddressed because of the manual touch points involved in servicing this market. So think of it this way, that this market always needed an insurance, but they were not as serious about their needs unless things were instant, because it's, we are in a world where you want everything instantly, even a grocery delivery you are expecting within 10 minutes, then why not insurance? So given the fractionalized segment of this market, there is a need of automation which the large brokers couldn't do, and hence this market was always underserved. And with the pandemic striking, everyone was looking at insurance for the first time in the history as a pull-based product than traditionally it being a push-based product.
It's that's interesting. I mean, obviously, like in terms of, you know, the market being underserved, be it SMBs, I mean, that's something which is probably... like it's mainstream, right? In terms of, I mean, not just insurance in general, any, most of the financial services oriented segments, you know, be it anything employee focused. I mean, SMBs are usually the late adopters there, right? And you're saying that obviously COVID acted as a trigger in terms of them realizing that, okay, this is something important and essential. But now, so I mean, pardon my friend, shit hit this fan and some things got, you know, kicked off. But now obviously things are quote unquote getting a bit more normalized again. Do you see this like trend to be like secular from your standpoint, or do you see this that there was obviously like a lumpiness in the business, but now you see things getting back to, you know, I won't say pre-COVID, but at least not at the degree of spike that you saw during COVID? Because I mean, at the end of the day, it's a cost, right, for the SMBs as well. And I mean, we know that, I mean, considering the kind of working capital constraints most SMBs have, and generally, you know, the general, I would say, you know, weak labor laws, it's a slow burn. But what's been your insight on that?
So I would say that rather the market is evolving in a direction where it's more becoming inclusive. You have the gig economy of all the futuristic platforms, which rely on these partners for fulfilling their, you could say, job activities.
Mm-hmm.
So gone are the days where employers would only cover their employees. Now we are even talking about how to cover those gig workers and get them at par with the permanent employees. And as far as the SMB...
But this, you see, is a criteria for the gig workers? Like, this is like something that they all want? I mean, it's an inbound...
This is a welfare benefit for them to move from the traditional jobs to these high intensive contractual jobs with all the leading e-com, fintech or logistics tech platforms.
Right. But I mean, contractual obviously removes other safety nets, right? I mean,
exactly. So yeah. That is what the government is also working towards with the new labor code. It is going to be mandatory that you treat your permanent employees and your gig workers alike. But even while that's happening, the market is them itself evolving in a direction where companies are looking to create inclusive benefits And even for SMBs, employee perquisites is something which is irreversible. Think of it this way, that if you hiked someone's salary, and do you think that after a couple of years, you will reverse it down? The answer is no. Same is the case with perquisites. The moment you have announced it, it is very difficult for any organization to pull it back. So in a way, it has been a positive, which is irreversible. And with the network effects kicking in, it's becoming more of, you could say, a widely accepted benefit, that if you are not providing, then you are in that negative criteria. Or if you're providing, it's a hygiene. Rather not being seen, oh, wow, you've additionally provided me this benefit. No, that's not no longer the case. It's being more treated like a hygiene criteria.
When you sort of, you know, have a white label solution which is being deployed by an SME, is there an advisory angle to your solution as well, which tells you what manufacturer to sort of go with, or what is right, what is not? And if so, at what granularity do you go? Like, can you go employee by employee? Can you go sort of cohort by cohort? How do you sort of wear that advisory hat as a tech solution?
Oh, that's a very wonderful question. So I would say that we have built an in-house price engine where group insurance, which so far has been you could say a black box for many players who don't really know that on what premise does the insurance company actually provide a quotation, because they don't expose their pricing logic. And it's a very dynamically calculated process. And you would say that there is no official mandate from the regulator to publish your group insurance pricing. So for every player, you will get a different set of pricing. It's very dynamic. It depends on what volumes you're driving. So firstly, on our side, we have a business model where we've committed an X business volume to our partners, on the basis of which we get certain negotiated discounts on what you could say standard group insurance rates are. Now, we've built and modeled that into our in-house price engine, where we have studied 20,000 sample points across each insurance partner, and we predict a quotation with about 99% accuracy. And the moment when there is a confirmation from the client, we actually draw a quote with 100% accuracy. So what that entire process of getting a quote from a partner offline, which was more of, say, I would say for certain cases, a 5 to 10 day job, for us, it is reduced to mere seconds, where we are able to predict pricing across multiple insurance partners without having to manually raise a quote from them. Because we've studied those 20,000 sample points and we've modeled that engine. Now, what we are saying is that this same tool should not be restricted to just our team. We have gone beyond, and we have, instead of competing with the market, we are collaborating with them. Because insurance, as you know, is a product which is high on education. Like, you need to educate the user enough before they sign up on a product. And practically, to it, educate someone, that person needs to first trust you and be more familiar with you. So you end up buying or trusting a person to give you an advice which is unbiased, which happens best with a person who is familiar in your network. It will be just, you could say, comparing policies and making a decision on your own. Because insurance is a complex product, which not everyone will understand at face value. You need to know that what are the things that really matter at time of claims or in terms of impacting the price. So that comes by way of a person who is more learned and educated. And if he is in your trusted cohort of network, he'll make you an unbiased advice as well. So what we are doing is we are empowering these trusted advisors, which includes the ranks of brokers, agents, or say your banking partners who you trust, or say B2B fintech platforms with whom you have other set of services, say whether it's on lending activities, or say HRMS activities, or expense management activities, or your offline business partners, as we discussed earlier, your CA firm, your legal firm, or your HR consultant that you trust. So these are the players who we are equipped with our tools drawing proposals, quotes instantaneously, and recommending unbiased advice to their end customer. And what we do in the backend is we educate and train them enough so that they can distribute these products more effectively.
Right.
And typical lead time to how much time does it take typically to, let's say, you've identified an SME, you've had a, they said yes, like I want to sort of get a plan for my employees. How long does it take when the ultimate, you know, the documents are signed, let's say?
Yep. So even the document signing is all digital. So we have a 48-hour onboarding process within which we go live with our customers or with their entire set of employee universe onboarded from the time we have their entire set of details, at least in terms of the name, gender, and date of birth to identify those individuals. We don't have any kind of health condition declarations or health checks. That's the beauty of group insurance. It's a very powerful social security tool where all members are covered from day one without any exceptions, regardless of their health conditions, regardless of their age.
I guess it has to be regardless of their health condition and age, right? I mean, when you compare it to sort of lending in fintech world, right? I mean, it's about condition over, and then you could say it's slightly more qualitative when it's a health insurance product, right? Like sort of
retail health insurance, you need to undergo certain checks of the insurance partners or insurance companies. But on group insurance, the premise is that you have the universe of healthy and unhealthy population being covered, so that risk is balanced out with healthier population getting covered, and predominantly employee being the focus, who is naturally healthy because he's reporting to work. So the case of abuse is a lot lower.
What was the, how did you kind of, I mean, this is a very precise product category, right, that you guys targeted. What was the origin behind that?
Oh, okay. So the origin story is very different. We wanted to build out a platform which would sell white labeled Ayurvedic products, homeopathic products, which are all unorganized. Right. But then we realized that if this platform were to grow or this space needs to grow, we need a lot of heavy lifting in terms of establishing the brand. And it's not so easy. It was possibly easy maybe 10 years earlier if you would start a D2C company. Mm-hmm. But now the competition is very high. You don't get that level of mind share even on online media platforms. So if you were to do something, it had to be all physical. Mm-hmm. So that would require, a lot of capital to be invested. And we felt that we were possibly too naive to even think about it. And the second thing that we thought was, okay, then can we create a trip advisor of healthcare, where possibly we could create a platform where people could exchange about their health conditions and how they have overcome certain chronic care diseases. But then we realized, no, this is something that possibly the user base would not be comfortable sharing, because people love to travel about their trips. Travel is a subject where people love sharing.
Yeah.
But healthcare is a subject where people want to keep it very close to themselves. Mm-hmm. So would people be willing to share? That was a big question mark that we had. And this would require a more level, a higher level of moderation than what... There's no risk if somebody shares any false news on TripAdvisor, but there's a big level of risk that we carry if somebody shares something harmful or negative in the healthcare space. So that was the second piece. And third was, like, can we do something into building into healthcare, where we build some digital therapeutic solution, or say making the lives of doctors or healthcare industry in general easier. But then we saw that there are so many healthcare solutions available in the market. All are possibly fragmented. Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to go B2B. B2C is practically very difficult to sell in India when it comes to healthcare. It is the universe of masses that brings that economies of scale. So we thought that if we are only looking to go B2B, then let's first understand that what do corporates really buy? And we saw that it was very evident that it is insurance that they first buy for their teams. They don't care too much about healthcare first. It is in the more sophisticated or mature stage of their life cycle.
Right.
So that is when we decided that if insurance is the first perquisite that they buy for their employees, that can become an entry point for us to get into corporates. And then we can build our healthcare solutions around it to further, you could say, build a holistic and inclusive solution. So that's how it all started. And at times it is so that it has been a more rubbed off dialogue ki jab tum koi cheez ko shiddat se chaho to puri kainat se tumse milane ki saazish
mil jati hai. Yeah, even a cow sona anyways.
So that is what happened. That COVID struck, and we thought that it cannot be a more classic opportunity to get in then. And then we studied the market deeper and we understood, yeah, 90% workforce to India mein SMEs mein.
Right.
So kaha wo matlab fancy offices mein jaate hain. So that is where we saw that the gap of insurance need to be first solved, and not just in terms of experience, but actually in terms of access.
Right.
And that's how we focused all our entire problem.
No, but like your starting point was the SMB, or your starting point was the broker?
No, starting point was the SMB.
Okay.
And then over the last 2 years, while we've signed up and onboarded 250 plus organizations and 75,000 lives, super proud to be securing onto our platform, we realized that, acha, itna humne achieve kar diya, but yaar, India market bahut bada hai. Like, they're only catering to the surface level organizations. And if we want to build this business from 10x to 1000x, there has to be a better strategy here. And that is where we modeled some of the developed countries, you could say, because insurance traditionally has and will always remain a product which is high on practically difficult to automate the sales process around insurance. And that is where we got into the infra play, where we are providing tools to sell and providing that entire post-sales dashboard and infrastructure through which our partners can effectively address this space.
Right.
US, right? I mean, post-COVID in the last 2022, let's call it, like, there has been a sharp downtick in the valuations that insurtech companies have warranted. Even some of the guys who recently went public as sort of VC-backed companies, they sort of saw a dip in valuation. And, the biggest reasons being cited are like profitability, path to profitability is unclear, and CACs are going up. Now, this is obviously a more of a B2C comment. Like, B2B, on the other hand, is sort of has that recurring revenue profile, is sort of widely considered to be more de-risk. How do you sort of see the Indian VC ecosystem or valuation ecosystem in terms of how insurtechs are being treated? And especially as Nikhil was saying, like, COVID obviously was a catalyst which had that initial short-term thrust, right? But there is a narrative that it's sort of falling off a little bit, and obviously net of long-term insurance will only grow. How do you see, like, in the current, not just fundraising standpoint, but in terms of the sector, like, do you see sort of valuations dipping and sort of CACs being pressured, and on the B2B side, how do you sort of view that?
So I would say that like what we've been hearing from people is that everyone is talking about India as a country of 1.4 billion population, but the real addressable market for all online players are actually the 10 crore population or 100 million population, to say. Yep. So what I would say is that the post funding winter scenario, the 2022 post funding winter scenario, is something that's taught all the startups today that, look, you can't be just looking at addressing the top, 10% of the population or top 10% of the businesses. If you really want to build that India growth story, the majority of the businesses will be concentrated in tier 2, 3, 4 cities as well. The majority of the population will be concentrated in sectors and in cities which are not necessarily all, digitally native. So if you were to actually build a large enough business, you need to marry your online strategy with your offline strategy. You can't be just spending high CACs on the digital forums to just get customers online. Possibly then that's a very small market that you are addressing. Think of it this way, that while the population of the country is 1.4 crore large, but the real addressable population on the digital channel is just possibly 5 to 10 crores. So is that the population on which you can build a large enough business? Possibly the answer could be no, or possibly the answer could be yes, if you are looking to build a business which is decent enough in scale and high on profits. But if you want to build a business which is exponential in scale and also yielding good enough profits, where you're providing better quality of products at better rates and at better shelf lives with better processes, then in that case, you need to think big. So what this funding interview has suggested to all of us is that, look, you may take a pause. Nobody's going to question you or blame you if you don't have a stellar growth, which is 10x year on year. Maybe you can grow 2x, 3x, 4x a year, but build a business that's sustainable enough where you've got your first principles right in terms of your go-to market. So it's good enough for it's a good welcome pause for everyone in the startup community, that you should go back to your drawing board and think of it, that how will you actually tap into that real universe of population of individuals or businesses, whether it's B2C or B2B. So for us in particular in insurance, we've realized that yes, that strategy of just looking at selling directly to organizations will erode all price margins for us, because you will then be just subject to price competition in absence of a relation. And that's where our strategy comes into play, that here today, the Turtlement of Group Insurance, I would proudly call that, where we are actually looking to leverage the relations that are built within the ecosystem.
On the D2C front, the insight is completely bang on, right? I mean, we ourselves see that how investors are now kind of risk off on that segment. And there's definitely a more, you know, like the narrative has now moved away from top line growth to profitability, right? In general, where obviously enterprise facing businesses are better positioned, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, like if you look at financial services at large, obviously insurance is something which is on the edge of or on the inflection point of digitizing. But before that, you know, we saw a wave of companies who targeted lending. Then we looked at, you know, companies who targeted payments, investments, right? And now obviously insurance is like a subset only of that, be it whether it's market linked or not, right? Now on the banking end of the industry, at least in India, what one can see is that manufacturers themselves over time, there's that entire argument of buy versus build, right? And a lot of the manufacturers on the banking end, they have developed those, tech-enabled capabilities. The government has helped them, right? The government has set up those base infra layers, you know, be it things like, you know, UPI, be it things like account aggregation framework and so on and so on. So in banking, we see that. And what's happening is that a lot of the traditional banking players, you know, be it scheduled commercial banks, etc., they have pretty much internalized a lot of those segments, right? I mean, effectively, the regulator has also been pretty clear in terms of underwriting that, when it comes to actual lending, it's going to be business as usual, right? I mean, that status quo is going to be maintained in terms of those big balance sheet players, which are highly regulated. And fintechs are kind of acting more as, you know, tech-enabled sales channels or distribution channels and so on and so forth, correct? Now, I mean, I'm not talking about your specific business model, but do you see a similar type of an evolution to happen on the insurance segment as well? In the sense that when you look at manufacturers, do you see them agile enough that they would, when it comes to distribution of their own products, they would probably also take the build versus kind of, you know, depending on a third-party vendor argument.
Got it. So I would say that the market forces are, you could say, moving the...
Close the thought, I mean, US is slightly different. I mean, I always feel that the Indian financial services ecosystem is at least 2-3 steps ahead of how we have seen the ecosystem evolve in the US, right? I mean, US still has the mechanics are fairly traditional there, whereas in India, you know, being mobile first and at the consumer end, I think has kind of taken giant leaps in the journey towards digitization.
Got it. So I would say that in terms of how the regulator is looking at this, so the insurance space is regulated by IRDA. And they've announced some interesting regulations which will actually force the manufacturers of insurance to look at tech-enabled distribution strategy, where from the time where it was actually letting insurers distribute commissions based on every product without bothering that what is the overall expense that insurance companies are incurring, they have allowed insurance companies that now they are letting go of the product-wise commission caps.
Right.
And what they're actually doing is they've imposed a universal expense of management limit, which is very tight. It's in the range of 30 to 35%, depending on whether it's a general insurance company or a standalone health insurer. So what this does is that it puts, you could say, a cap on how much expenses can you actually incur from the premiums that you've collected. Think of it as an IPL kitty, that no matter you want all the best players, but you have to be frugal enough on where you are spending. Likewise, yeah.
So basically, you're referring to the, you know, acquisition costs that manufacturers incur, yeah. Right?
Not acquisition costs. It's the complete cost of acquisition to servicing and actually maintaining their internal operations.
Okay.
So the overall cost that they incur on a base of, say, 100 rupee of premium that they collect, excluding the claims, cannot go more than 30 or 35. Right. And the balance can be towards the claim space.
Okay.
So here now, there are many companies who would have breached that limit as of today based on their public disclosures, and they have to think on their strategy of how do they minimize these costs of distribution or minimize the costs of servicing. And that is where they would be forced to think about adopting tech-enabled solutions to look at making their processes you could say pre-sales, post-sales more efficient, and look at more of insurtech intermediaries of how could this infra play be governed, whether it's by...
But do you see a large part of that they plan to do themselves? Do you see that? Do you see that agility or that intent in terms of digital transformation?
I would say that as far as insurance is a space concerned, it would be very difficult to wheel out distributors out of the chain, because it's a space which requires that level of education to be done.
Right.
And everyone wants to have that option of choice on the palette. You can't be just pitching your own product to a prospect buyer and having him to identify who the other players are who I could possibly speak to. People want everything to be brought together on one single comprehensive palette, and that is where the distributor's role becomes more relevant.
But would you characterize distributors as, I mean, they also have tied arrangements, right, with specific manufacturers at the end of the day. Like, it's not like, I mean, okay, they might show like a basket of products, but there is obviously some sort of a commercial incentive that pulls them towards those products. I mean, they will never actually push the 100% or the 360 degree purview of products out there.
No, so I would say that even here, the regulator has been very open you could say mature enough in terms of easing up the regulations as to how many insurers can one actually partner with. So right. Traditionally, an individual could partner with one insurer on general insurer side, standalone health insurer side, and life insurer side. That limit has been raised to 333.
Right.
For a corporate agent, which is, say, HealthySure, we were earlier allowed to partner with 3 companies each, but now we can partner with 9 companies each, making our total tally to 27 insurers,
right,
on a base of 50 insurers that exist in the country, or right, rather 60 insurers that exist in the country. And for the brokers, they have always allowed them to empanel with multiple insurers here.
Hmm.
So it's not that you would be affiliated to very tight set of insurance players. You will at least have a wide bouquet of insurers that you can partner with, so that the consumer gets the choice to make. And naturally, the market is moving in a direction where people will question if you are pitching to them a substandard product or policy.
Right.
Gone are the days where you have the mis-selling of traditional investment-linked life insurance products which return less than 6% IRR.
Yeah.
Everyone now knows that that's not the right product to possibly cover. Don't mix investment with risk management,
right,
and rather look at term life insurance products, which actually play the role of giving you a handsome, comprehensive protection in case of death.
Right.
So the market is also evolving, and the new gen players will naturally push the market in the direction
right.
of something which is more reasonable and genuine for everyone to consume.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, like I remember right when around a year before I was planning to move out of the UK, one of the biggest, regulatory changes that happened there was this thing called the Retail Distribution Review or the RDR, where they actually, you know, made effectively, they kind of created a demarcation between commission-based and fee-based distribution of financial services products, including insurance. And, when it comes to guys like IFAs, who would be earlier getting, you know, trailing commissions, then they will actually be moved to a more advisory fee type of structure from the customers. I mean, in India, I think the jury on that has been mixed in the sense that a lot of the times the customers themselves don't want a kind of an advisory model, right? I mean, effectively, they don't want an upfront investment from their end. They would rather, they're okay with, you know, something loaded into like an expense ratio of the product, which would be a cost for them, but it is backloaded, right? Do you see that, maybe it's very early days in insurance in India, right? I mean, but do you see that mindset also to be, a cause of mis-selling one way or the other?
So I would say that the mis-selling happens because the market possibly lacks that education on financial products or insurance products.
Mm-hmm.
The day when there's heavy sense of insurance awareness education done by the manufacturers or maybe as part of academics, we will see these problems on like fading out. But yes, the fact that insurance commissions are backloaded and they're not transparent enough,
right.
That possibly could be a virtue towards mis-selling that happens in the industry, but it's rather the lack of awareness on the other side, which I would blame more
right.
rather than the design of how the commissions are loaded into the products, whether it's transparent or whether it's built in.
Understood. No, thanks.
Healthy, sure to sort of grow, and this is the closing thought, closing comment from you. Sure to grow, right? I mean, on the manufacturer side, it's obviously slightly restrictive and shorter runway, but on the SMB side, it's sort of a play of adding more and more guys and adding more and more clients. And sort of, is that sort of the most obvious way to grow, or are there other sort of parallels or other products or other sort of
going? Oh, yes. Yeah. So,
how do you see growth essentially? Yes.
Yeah. So what we are looking at is that the moment we have an employee on board onto our platform through our partners, we would be looking to maximize the wallet share by giving him all the relevant products that he would foresee in his journey or in his life cycle. Say, for example, his organization has covered him with a group insurance that's covering him on health for himself, his spouse, and his child. We would further give him an option where he could add a health cover for his parents. We would give him an option where he can enhance and upgrade the organization-powered insurance with an enhanced coverage at very nominal cost. We would give him an option to buy a personal life insurance or a personal travel cover or a personal retail pet cover, where he could even centralize all his other personal insurances on one single platform. Mm-hmm. And that would be our growth story here. Plus, we'll also give him access to healthcare products, whether it's on Doctor On Call or, say, mental wellness or, say, health diagnostics or health checkups or, say, maybe gym memberships or OPD plans. So that way, we'll continue to expand on the wallet share and look at a corporate not just as a single entity, but a universe of, say, the number of employees that are covered under the...
So the idea would be to kind of have touch points even post their employment stint.
Post, even post their employment,
Or when they're with a new, say, they're with a new employer or something like that.
That's got a lot of B2C flavor on your B2B2B, correct?
Oh, yes.
B2B2B2C. Now.
Yeah. So you can add too many Bs and then add a C.
Yeah. But where are you guys Anuj, in terms of from a traction standpoint, I know that you guys have raised like around 1.3, 1.4 million to date. I mean, at least that's what the traction data said. I don't know how updated that is. If not, feel free to update. If you don't want to share, that's also fine. But I mean, in terms of, you know, from a fundraising standpoint and from the standpoint of, you know, onboarding more and more partners, where do you send, kind of, you know, fit yourself from a staging perspective? Yeah.
So I would say that we have modeled into the new strategy, and we are close to now 100 partners strong. We are going to look at financial year 24 with a 100 crore premium book size and 1,000 plus organizations on board onto our platform, with about, I would say, close to 750,000 lives that would be covered. So that is our plan for the year, and things are looking very promising. On the fundraise piece, I will choose not to comment at this stage until it's official.
Great. No, thanks. Thanks, Anuj. This was super helpful. More power to you. We'll definitely be keeping track of Healthy Sure. And it was a very fascinating chat. I started my career by looking at primarily UK insurance companies. So this was pretty much a review or revision of sorts for me as well. So thanks a lot for your time. So with that, I think this is the end of this episode. This is Nikhil Arora, and I have with me Sharad Tupran signing off.